Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy. Tom Metzger. In the heartland, in the bunker. Right here in north central Indiana, transmitting to the world and all the ships at sea. And all the satellites up in the sky, baby. Yeah, we got the wolf calls going. Have you heard the wolf call in your community? If you have a CB radio, we'll put the wolf call on. Let's get them howling everywhere around the country on Channel 5. Yeah, right, yeah. P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And address your mail to occupant, box holder, Tom Metzger, insurgent, or whatever yanks your crank, baby. Yeah. Go. We recorded that last night over at the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern and Cafe and Filling Station and all that kind of stuff. Pretty cold. We didn't have too many people out there last night, but we had a good time. It's the 4th of March 2014, and it's Tears Day here in the bunker, and we're ready to go. Are you? I'm a little late getting this show on. I was talking to the boys over in Russia on Skype, and our good buddy up there in Canada, and we got to jawing about old times, and I almost didn't get out of there. Well, I barely got myself out of bed, and I had reporters on the phone this morning from up there in North Dakota about this Lee situation. And here's one of the articles came out already. Bismarck, North Dakota. A white supremacist who tried unsuccessfully to turn a small North Dakota town of Leith into an all-white enclave has returned his property to the city. Now, wait a minute. It was an all-white conclave. There was only one non-white in the whole town of 25, I guess. It was a black guy, but it was... Didn't need to turn it into an all-white enclave. Mayor Ryan Schock, can you imagine being a mayor of a town of 20-some people? The Associated Press tells the Associated Press that Craig Cobb deeded his six remaining lots back to the city at no charge. The mayor calls it a, quote, huge relief. Cobb awaits sentencing on a charge of terrorizing residents by carrying out armed patrols in mid-November. I never thought it was an armed patrol unless the weapon was loaded, and none of those weapons were loaded, according to my information. Well, the reason now they took him out of jail was going to let him go, and then now they're putting him back into jail because they want to check with the Canadians and see if they can figure any way of screwing around with that charge they got against him up in Canada, which has nothing to do with his free speech down here in Soviet Kanukistan. They put you in jail for talking. Yeah, so anyhow. Schock, the mayor, says Cobb sold the three properties to a resident of nearby Carson who plans to use the house for storage. Cobb earlier gave properties to white separatist Tom Metzger, National Socialist Movement commander Jeff Shope, white supremacist Alex Linder. Metzger tells AP has no plans to return his property. Shope and Linder didn't immediately return calls. So there you got the latest scoop. I told him, I said, I may come up next summer to see my lot, but I sure as hell ain't coming up there now. I thought Indiana was cold, but when I read the weather reports from Bismarck and up there in North Dakota, I say, wow, man, that's too much. Here's part of an article, too, from the Dickinson, North Dakota Press. Cobb purchased a dozen lots in Leith between September 2011 and October 2012 and moved to the city last April with hopes of attracting enough like-minded people to take over the town's government. Last month, while in jail on terrorizing charges, fake terrorizing charges, he sold his house in Leith, the two lots on which it sits, and a third lot to a man from nearby Carson who says he plans to use the property for storage. Cobb also previously deeded three of his lots to fellow white supremacist Alex Linder and white separatist Tom Metzger and the National Socialist Movement commander Jeff Scoop. Metzger said by email Tuesday that he doesn't plan to return his vacant lot to the city. Quote, after the shaft the system is giving to Craig Cobb, I have no interest in giving anything back, unquote, he wrote, adding he is getting suggestions from many associates on how to manage the property, unquote. Scope, whose lot in Leith contains the old creamery next to Cobb's former house, and Linder, whose lot is vacant, did not immediately respond to messages seeking comment. Cobb deeded his remaining six lots back to the city on Friday, Schock said. It's really a good feeling, he said. It kind of puts a closing on it. I guess, he said. Well, it ain't over till it's over there, Mr. Mayor. Last week, Cobb entered a guilty plea on one count of felony terrorizing. Whoa! Anyhow, Grant County State's Attorney Todd Schwartz said during Thursday's plea hearing that Cobb was expected to deed his lots back to the city or a disinterested third party. Under the recommendations of sentence in the plea agreement, Cobb, who has been in jail since November 16th, would not serve any additional jail time. He would be on supervised probation for 4 years with several conditions.
one of which he can't even own a gun. Shock said he would still like to, this is the mayor of this little burg, Shock said he would like to see Cobb serve additional time behind bars, noting that Cobb remains in jail in Mercer County during the pre-sentence investigation. Quote, every day helps, I guess, unquote, Shock said. Well, we'll see how it ends up, Mr. Shock, the mayor. It ain't over till it's over, Mr. Mayor. Well, I see Radio Shack is about to close 1,100 stores. They must be getting ready to go down the tube, baby. Their prices are way too high. Anyhow, that's the problem with Radio Shack. And I've been dealing with Radio Shack ever since the 50s, back when they had one store. I think it was in Boston or someplace back there, because I used to buy ham radio equipment from them. So, but anyhow, well, we got a school teacher who's got big trouble for telling the truth. He says, quote, young black thugs need to be put down like dogs. School psychologist racist tweets spark civil rights group fury. A school psychologist working with deprived African Americans has sparked fury from civil rights groups after saying that black thugs should be put down like the dogs they are. Mark Trena, who works in suburban New Orleans, has posted dozens of racially charged rants on Twitter. Well, that's his opinion. The married 55-year-old has even accused black thugs of declaring war on the American way of life. Well, that's for sure. Anybody knows that. And adds that the real terrorist lives amongst us. Well, you got that straight. His Twitter said, here's a Twitter, he said, young black thugs who won't follow the law need to be put down, not incarcerated, put down like the dogs they are. Then he said, on the 14th of January, young black thugs have created an atmosphere of fear throughout America. The real terrorists live amongst us, not overseas, right here and now. Right, that's correct. Then he said, we are faced with young black army of thugs who have declared war on the American way of life, holding America hostage as we speak. And then he said, here's another one. Police seek two people in Bywater slaying death of a nation killed by young black thugs who took over everything from the bottom up. Wow, that's something else. He ignited further fury when he said that the 17-year-old Trayvon Martin's killer, George Zimmerman, was the real victim, and the night watchman held his ground against an unarmed intruder. Now the civil rights organization Southern Poverty Law Center has attacked the Jefferson Parish School Board for employing Trena. That's the name of the teacher. They also claim he has helped the board send a disproportionate number of black and disabled students to alternate schools to languish for months. What was he expect him to do? Give him the Nobel Peace Prize? Trena is partly responsible for placing pupils in special needs campuses. In another online post, Trena indicated he supported the segregationist policies of former Alabama Governor George Wallace. In March, he remarked on the Republican presidential primaries by writing, I grew up in Mississippi, Alabama, and Louisiana. I am a Wallace man at heart. Trena said he supported George Zimmerman, left, who shot by, oh no. Eden Heilman, a lawyer for the Southern Poverty Law Center, told the Times-Picayune, it's particularly alarming to have someone who works for the school system in a position of authority be pro-segregation. Well, I think you should be free to discriminate. Discrimination is great, one of the truly great freedoms we have enjoyed in the past. The group's action has prompted an investigation by the school board. Now everybody's going to pass the buck. The U.S. Department of Education Office on Civil Rights will also be sending representatives to Jefferson Parish this week. Although Trina insists he doesn't represent Jefferson Parish, only himself. I make that very clear in my comments, he told the newspaper. His most incendiary tweet was written among a slew of offensive comments made on the social media site on January the 14th. Let me see what that was. Whoops. Where is it here? Well, anyhow, I think that's enough. Southern Poverty Law Center. Southern Millionaires Law Center. Yeah, man. They never talk about real ambulance chasers or civil rights parade chasers. That's what these guys are. Well, a furious dispute has erupted between Serbian scientists and the Orthodox Church after it was announced that the remains of inventor Nikola Tesla will be buried in a church. A pioneer in fields such as electricity, radio, and x-rays, Tesla had 300 patents under his name by the time he died in 1943, and is revered by some as one of the most important scientific brains of the late 19th and early 20th century. Tesla died in the U.S., where he had spent much of his life, but in 1957, his ashes were moved to the Nikola Tesla Museum in Belgrade, now the Serbian capital. Under pressure from the Serbian Orthodox Church, government officials announced last week that they're planning to move Tesla's remains from the museum to the city's St. Sava Church, the largest Orthodox church in the world, where it is to be reburied alongside national heroes, including 14th century Prince Lazar, who led a Christian army against the invading Ottomans. Scientists in Serbia have criticized the move, due to be carried out in this July, arguing that Tesla was not religious and should be upheld as a figurehead for science rather than religion. The Tesla Museum has also called for the remains to stay put, highlighting that it is wish of his descendants, who asked for the urn to be transported to then Yugoslavia capital in the 50s. We stay firm with the opinion it is much better to have the urn in the museum, said the museum's director, Vladimir Jelenkovic. This is the right place to keep it, knowing the open-minded soul Tesla had. After all, it was his wish and the wish of his successors to keep the urn in the museum. We are obliged to accept their wishes. A Facebook campaign, Leave Tesla Alone, started almost immediately after the announcement was made and has already gathered more than 30,000 supporters on social media who want to see Tulsa's ashes stay where they are. Church leaders, however, say that the museum is not an appropriate resting place for Tulsa. Well, if not there, where, you dumb shits? Patriarch Irinija of the Serbian Orthodox Church told the local media it is natural that the name of Serbian history rests in peace at the holiest place in Serbian history. When he was inventing radio and all that and x-rays, you would probably said he was coming from the devil, you jerks. Tesla is best known for his work on alternating current, and his ideas were used in the development of radio communication, the electric motor and radar. He was born in a town in what is now Croatia in 1856. He went to university at Graz, Austria, and began working for the inventor Thomas Edison in 1884. The pair fell out, however, and each battled for years to convince the world that his way of generating electricity was better and more efficient than others. Well, Edison wanted DC, and Tesla wanted AC, and obviously AC was the way to go. There were a lot of lawsuits at the time too, and George Westinghouse was involved. And I'm trying to remember now whose side who was on, but it was quite a tussle, and I think Tesla ended up on the little end of the stick, dying pretty much in poverty. But now they've just resurrected his scientific buildings there on Long Island, I believe it is, and the big Tulsa Tower is still standing, so I think that that's good, but don't take his ashes to a church. Well, here's something that doesn't sound too good. Liberals, billionaire Warren Buffett now has come out for the Keystone XL pipeline. That's not a good, that's not a good thing. That pipeline is very dangerous to the environment and the ecology of the country and the watershed and the water under the ground. Shame on you, Buffett. He's also come out and attacked Bitcoin. Another reason not to be too happy with Mr. Billionaire Buffett. But who can trust a billionaire? Well, here's a good one. Just a second here. Let me get it straight here. Disgraced conservative columnist John Derbyshire is urging the Republican Party to abandon its meager efforts to court voters who aren't racist white men. Well, who in the hell has disgraced him? He's not disgraced. It sounds like a hero to me. Derbyshire, who lost his job with the National Review after publishing a nasty, indefensible 2012 column about his racial prejudices. Nasty and indefensible? They're very defensible. I defend him, told Communities Digest Services News on Friday that the GOP would never attract enough black and women voters to be worth the effort. The future of the conservative movement is a home for white ethnocentrism, said Derbyshire, who now writes for the white nationalist Vidare. He said conservatives are the only people in the USA trying to transcend contentious racial issues, but agreed with his friend, white nationalist Jared Taylor, that white people should stop trying to get along with black people. Yeah, that's for sure. Well, maybe they're trying to recreate true conservatism here, because conservatism really died a long time ago. The people that use conservative all the time today are not conservatives at all. They, in no way could they be called conservatism. Not, unless they're trying to conserve everything that's been created in the last 40 years that's bad, they want to conserve that. They want to conserve what's bad. Quote, whites may as well start asserting themselves and joining in fighting for the spoils. Unquote, he said. I agree. If might is right. If that's right, colorblind conservatism is a dead end, and the future of the conservative movement is a home for white ethnocentrism. Well, I don't want to call it conservatism because that's too... That's just not enough. Insurgency. That's what I want to call it. He also suggested that Republicans should also give up on trying to appeal to women and become more bellicose. Well, there's a hell of a lot of women. There's a percentage of white women out there definitely hardcore like the men. So don't go out of your way to piss them off. He said, women are just like that, Derbyshire said. One thing we might try would be putting some alpha males up front instead of mealy-mouthed, cringing betas. Well, I like that. I think I'll vote for this guy. Well, I see that they're trying to try Osama bin Laden's son-in-law or son out in New York City. I'm totally opposed to that. I believe he was on primarily his own turf fighting for his land and his people. And I think it's a travesty of justice to try his son. Quote, Republicans like Senator Graham can almost taste the blood that a new military conflict would spill. They are aroused by the idea that their Cold War fantasies of war with Russia could finally be realized, unquote. However, the U.S. public is war-weary following over a decade of engagement in Afghanistan and long and difficult occupation of post-Saddam Iraq, while senior Republicans like John McCain have also called for a more robust American response to Russia's incursion into the Ukraine, the reality is that the United States and its European allies have limited options. It is inconceivable that there will be a military response from the West, Secretary of State John Kerry and the British Foreign Secretary William Hague both have ruled out military support for a fledgling government like Kiev. Britain and the U.S., along with Russia, are bound to respect. See, what they want to do, though, they want to put the economic pinchers on. That's what's wrong with the global financial economy. They can gang up on anybody in the world by using finance and sanctions. So that's what they're going to do to Russia. But that has a way of backfiring, boys and girls. It can backfire. These Republican congressmen and senators are so damn cowardly, like all these talk show guys. All these right-wing talk show guys, none of them, or at least most of them that I know of, never were in the military, never were overseas, never were in battle or anything else. There's a hell of a lot more of people on the left, actually, in the Democrat Party that have served in the military more than these Republicans. But this Lindsey Graham impressed me as being closet something. I think he's a closet something. But the Republicans, so far, I've never seen a war they didn't love. They love the wars. Well, Prime Minister Netanyahu, his APAC speech, that big super meeting of Jews in Washington, D.C., on Tuesday, was an unofficial announcement of a unilateral end of negotiations, unquote, AFP reported a top Palestinian official as saying. Fatah Central Committee member of the Nibit Shah said Nitwit's comments contravene all the rules of peace negotiations agreed with the Americans. Shah said that the Palestinians totally reject Israel's demand of Palestinians to recognize Israel as a Jewish state, as well as Netanyahu Nitwit's objection to refusing Palestinian refugees. Nitwit, during his speech, stated that the historic peace agreement with the Palestinians would open up the possibility of escalating ties with leading countries in the Arab world. But first, they say the Palestinians have to recognize the state of Israel. Well, they never should. The prime minister said that many of these Arab countries already know that Israel is not the enemy. Peace with the Palestinians would turn these into open and thriving relationships, said Nitwit. Don't trust that guy as far as you can throw him. Not at all. Well, unknown individuals painted swastikas and phrased death to the Jews, unquote, on a synagogue in the Crimea region of southern Ukraine. The graffiti was found Friday on the door and the facade of Reform near Timad Synagogue in Simopol in the Crimean Peninsula. The Russian-Israeli news site isras.co.il reported. Clearly, it was important for the anti-Jews to commit this so-called crime. Since the crisis began, prices went up to 30%. Pensions aren't being paid. As usual, Jews are blamed for these disasters, and Jews are held responsible. Well, I'd say a lot of big-shot Jews are. I'm afraid to think how this will progress, unquote. He wrote in a statement sent to the media by the World Union of Progressive Judaism. The attack took place as Ukrainian troops reported takeovers of two airports in the Crimea region by forces they said were Russian. The Crimea region is heavily populated by ethnic Russians. Protests against Ukraine's elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, forced him to flee the capital, blah, 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 blah. And earlier this week, firebombs hit the Shabbat-run Orthodox Glamet Rosa Synagogue in Zaporozhye, located 250 miles southeast of Kiev. That attack was caused only minor damage. One problem I find with this, a lot of this is based on the Christian religion and the anti-Semitism or anti-Judaism still in the Eastern Orthodox churches. I don't think it's as much based on day-to-day criminality of the rich as much as it is on the traditions of anti-Jew within the church. I don't have confidence in that approach. I think that you have to catch them cold doing their criminal activity and their corruption and deal with them. And not because somebody said something in the 10th century. We're dealing with now. What's happening now? What are the top Jews in the world doing now? Well, let's drop in and see what Jim Hightower's got to say today.
From the Gatling gun to the nuclear bomb, from hot air balloons to drones, the military has enlisted scientists to develop ever more effective war technologies. But now comes a long-sought scientific breakthrough that the military brass considers the ultimate advantage for battlefield effectiveness. Ready-to-eat pizzas. With the spare-no-expense determination usually associated with something like the Manhattan Project, teams of the best scientific minds at the U.S. Army Natick Soldier Research and Engineering Center have been focused intently on this secret pizza project. It seems that the combat troops have been asking, even begging, that the individual field rations they get, called meals ready to eat, include pizza. Not easily done, however. MREs are prepackaged, shipped to faraway combat zones, and stored for months. Problem is that the sauce, cheese, and toppings of pizza contain moisture that turns the dough soggy, allowing bacteria to grow, spoil the pie, and poison the eaters. Using humectants, food engineers were able to stop the moisture from reaching the dough, but that was not the end of it, for the Army was gunning for the holy grail of MREs, a prepackaged pizza that could be stored in 80-degree heat without refrigeration for 3 years and still be fresh. At last, the scientists have announced VP Day. By adding acid to the ingredients and iron filings to the packaging, science has triumphed over nature, delivering a pizza that's literally for the ages. This is Jim Hightower saying, perhaps you're wondering about taste. Well, picky. After 3 years, the crust is not exactly crisp, and the things are not served hot, so these are hardly the pies of Mario Batali. However, Mario doesn't do battlefield deliveries. But wait, that could be a good use of drones.
Now, how much is that going to cost the taxpayers for these spoilt little volunteers over there and all the Negroes and the Mexicans and everybody that just got to have a pizza pie? Ugh, Jesus. You know it's going to cost or has cost millions. It's never tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands to figure things like that out. They ought to figure out how to quit putting that surplus radioactive material in the ammo and stuff so it's not killing our troops like a long fuse months and years after they come home. Yeah, that's the way it works. It's a slow death. Unless, you know, like so many of them are doing, committing suicide or going ballistic and killing their families because of nuclear poisoning. Well, let's see what's up with Fat Tony, Chris Christie, the friend of Stray Dog, not. Okay, here we go. Let's see what's cooking.
Chris Christie is screwed. It's been a rough few weeks for the New Jersey governor. First, news broke that some of his aides allegedly unleashed a traffic nightmare on the citizens of Fort Lee, New Jersey, as part of a political vendetta against that city's mayor. Then news broke that Christie was being investigated on the federal level for misusing Hurricane Sandy relief money by funding a quasi-political ad featuring his family. Now there are fresh allegations that Christie's administration threatened to withhold Hurricane Sandy relief money from the town of Hoboken, New Jersey, if that city's Democratic mayor didn't approve a new city project. This weekend, Hoboken Mayor Dawn Zimmer took to the airwaves and said that Christie's lieutenant governor, Kim Gadano, had approached her in the summer of 2013 and implied that Hoboken would only get relief money if a new city project was approved. While these stories might be getting all the attention from the mainstream media right now, there are plenty of other skeletons in Chris Christie's closet. Joining me now to talk about a few of those skeletons is Greg Pallas, investigative reporter with BBC News and The Guardian, and author of the New York Times bestseller, Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. Greg, welcome back.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
It's always great to see you. So what is the Committee for Our Children's Future, and what role did they play in helping Christie in 2012?
Ooh, that's what I'd like to know. Committee for Our Children's Future put $6 million into saying that Chris Christie had performed more miracles than Jesus did at that wedding. Now, when the New York Times investigated, Chris Christie's office indicated that it was just a bunch of old college chums of Christie that put up this money. But no one explained how these working class guys and these middle class guys got $6 million to promote Governor Christie. But as soon as I heard the phrase, Children's Future, Committee for Our Children's Future, I knew it wasn't started in New Jersey by Christie's chums. I went back into my old files, almost 20 years old, and found out that Campaign for Our Children's Future was started by David and Charles Koch. It was a front organization used to funnel money, at that time illegally, from Koch Industries to Republican candidates. It was shut down after Senate investigators realized it was being used as a money laundering operation to help their political buddies. This $6 million spent by the newly resurrected Children's Future happened to come the same week that David Koch announced that he was pushing Chris Christie for president. It also happened at the same time that that Children's Future was represented by a group called BlackRock. BlackRock is the organization which also is the sole spokesperson for a group called Restore Our Future. And one of the main funders of Restore Our Future is Bill Koch, the third Koch brother. This all happened after secret meetings, which were never shown on Christie's schedule, between David Koch and Chris Christie, and Charles and David Koch, one in Manhattan, one meeting in Manhattan, one meeting in Vail, Colorado. These were not on his schedule. Why is this important? Because, Tom, if Christie is secretly coordinating, consulting, giving any hints, or working at all with the Kochs on a so-called independent committee to spend $6 million to promote him and bloat up his political career, that's still against the law. Citizens United or not, that's still the last remaining law that Chris Christie may have figured out how to break. That's why we need a subpoena on the big boys, on the billionaires around Chris Christie.
Whoa. That's astounding. First of all, if these meetings were not on the governor's schedule, how did you find out that he was hanging out with the Kochs?
Well, you should understand, I was working with the FBI about 17 years ago, hunting down the Kochs. I didn't even know who they were. Then I wrote an article called The Billionaires, the Richest Guys You've Never Heard Of. So I've been keeping files on them for about 17 years, and that's how I found Committee for Our Children's Future. I traced this back with the help of the great reporter Brad Friedman, who got the tapes out of the secret tapes out of the meeting out of Vail, Colorado. There was a mention in the tape by David Koch of a private meeting with Chris Christie. Now, the interesting thing is that wasn't on Mr. Christie's schedule. He also had a meeting at the Manhattan Institute with another billionaire known as Paul the Vulture Singer. The Vulture also is a big fan of Christie's and put money into Restore Our Future. We need to know if these billionaires are pulling their old trick of using Children's Future as an illegal front for putting money behind a candidate in coordination with the candidate. It's very much a kind of Koch trick. David Koch is a bit like Moriarty. He's got to let you know that he's being a bad boy. So using the name of his old organization, which was found to be conducting illegal activities, is kind of like a wink-wink, like, I'm still here, look out, and I've got a big checkbook behind me.
Well, do you know for a fact that this new CCF is the same as the old one, or has the same, I mean, are you, How do you know that it actually is the Koch money as opposed to Pete Peterson or something, some other billionaire?
Yeah, well, this is why we need subpoenas on more than traffic cones, because all we know is this: secret meetings with David and Charles Koch. No one is in the room except for Chris Christie and the Kochs. Suddenly, there's $6 million by guys who don't have $6 million using a front organization which was in fact started by the Kochs 17 years ago. Is this the same? Does this mean that their money was actually handed to them by the Koch brothers? We can't find out because Committee for Our Children's Future is, under the tax laws, technically a social welfare charity.
It's a 501c3.
We can't find out who's put the money behind them.
Wow.
It's a 501c4. And so we can't find out. All we know, it's the same week that Koch is, and the three Koch brothers, remember, there are three that you have to keep an eye on: Charles, David, and Billy.
Right.
You got three Koch brothers pushing this billionaires club, which is pushing Christie. At the time, there's suddenly $6 million spent.
Why do the billionaires? You said Paul Singer too. Why do the billionaires like Chris Christie? What is it about him that causes them to want to pour money into his campaign?
Two words: carried interest. There's a special billionaires tax loophole called carried interest. Paul the Vulture Singer picked up $1.3 billion on a hit on the U.S. Treasury that he sucked out of the auto bailout funds. The Kochs have also made massive amount of money, which is subject to, in which they can hide their earnings through carried interest. And so you have a bunch of billionaires. Very few people have access to this tax loophole.
If you call your income carried interest instead of income or instead of dividends, that it's taxed at a different rate than if it was like you or me getting a paycheck?
Exactly, but almost, there's very few people on this in America that can access this, and they have saved billions of dollars. Obama was threatening to close this loophole. Chris Christie has said in the secret tape that he would not permit a so-called tax on millionaires, the words that they want to hear. Also understand that the Kochs have a direct interest in the XL pipeline, not as owners, but as the recipients of the oil. The XL pipeline would terminate at their Corpus Christi refinery. So they're very concerned about the XL pipeline, and they're very concerned, the Kochs are very concerned about killing off the whole debate about global warming. And so Chris Christie, just after meeting with David Koch, but just before meeting with Charles Koch in Vail, in between those two Koch meetings, Chris Christie shockingly pulls the state of New Jersey out of the regional greenhouse gas pact. In other words, he's actually doing the one thing that New Jersey could do to reduce greenhouse gas emissions between the two meetings with the brothers Koch. And after that, he suddenly gets $6 million from an organization which, by name, they had started many years earlier. It sounds too coordinated. There's too many coincidences here. And if it's not just a coincidence, if it's more than a coincidence, then it's a violation of federal law.
Yeah, that's remarkable. That regional pact was the pact where all the states got together and said, if all of the rest of you states reduce your emissions, then we will too, if I'm remembering right.
That's right. And it was actually, you know, here we have Chris Christie running around with the President of the United States during Hurricane Sandy in the aftermath, looking at the damage created by climate disaster. And yet, there's nothing said about the fact that after meeting with David Koch, he suddenly pulls the state of New Jersey out of the climate pact. That's stunning. And then he's rewarded by David Koch. Come on.
Yeah, very, very interesting. As always, Greg Palast, thanks so much for being with us, Greg.
Well, 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 the plot thickens and the pot gets deeper. More, more, more money in the pot, as my mother used to say. More blood in the gutter and me without a spoon. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, you remember what I told you. The Koch brothers, these multi-billionaires, perhaps the richest guys in the country, are funding the Tea Party. Yeah, and that's what I told you when I called them out on that when they appeared locally here with their big $100,000, $200,000 bus and with this phony... Profit America or something on the side. So it's not directly, they don't have Koch brothers on the outside, and they don't have Tea Party on the outside, but that's where the money's coming from. And that's why I'm a little upset with some of our friends who have still believe that there may be some hope in the Tea Party. It's not to be trusted, even though there's a lot of people, but there's a lot of people being suckered into the Tea Party. So these Republicans, you know, and a lot of people spend a lot of time showing the corruption of the Democrats. There's plenty of it, you know, like Chuck Schumer, all these kind of guys. There's plenty of corruption there, but the Republican Party is the ones that are misleading the most white people, the most fairly racially conscious white people. And right down the primrose lane, and here's a perfect example, Chris Christie, the champion of the working class. Let's see what this palace guy thinks of the NSA. Let's see what he's got to say about that. Now, don't look for stuff like this on the Rush Scumbaugh show or Hannity and all these right-wing so-called patriots who carry the water for the super corporations and the warmongers. Let's see what this is going to be here.
Titled, you know, Rest in Peace, Aaron Swartz. And he linked to a piece that he wrote for Vice magazine just about a year ago about Aaron Swartz. And actually a little bit about Pierce Morgan. Hey, Greg Palast. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Okay.
Okay. We're live on the air. How are you?
Okay. What you wearing, doll? Oh, we're live on the air. Sorry.
And you can see what I'm wearing because I stream video, too. You know, we get it out there however we can.
Well, I'm doing pretty good, but, you know, the nation, despite Obama declaring the state of the nation is strong, has its own problems.
Yeah.
So, any questions?
Any questions? Well, I guess. Well, today is the day we fight back. And actually, I got to thank you for the email you sent yesterday, and the republication of the article that you wrote just about a year ago. You know, right after the death of Aaron Swartz, talking about the importance of you know, our freedoms. Right? You know, I got to say, in the first half hour of the show, I played a segment of an interview I did with Congressman Alan Grayson that we recorded back in August. I mean, I speak to him a lot, but in this time, we spoke extensively about Aaron Swartz because Aaron was an intern in his office for a time, and we talked about the NSA's abuses, it's the only way I can put it, and the revelations we've learned thanks to Edward Snowden. We had Congressman Grayson saying Edward Snowden is a whistleblower in the classic sense of the term, and then went on to very incredulously wonder how President Obama does not see this as a man who taught constitutional law, how he does not understand what the Fourth Amendment means.
Or the First Amendment.
Well, that too.
Protection of, as a journalist, these, what we call whistleblowers, are to me known as sources. And, you know, I write for The Guardian with Glenn Greenwald, and Ed Snowden is our source.
Right.
And he was made public. You know, it's, and by the way, at GregPalast.com you can read what I was talking about. It's called Rest in Peace, Aaron Swartz. He died 1 year and 1 month ago today. There's a coalition of organizations. When he found Reddit, by the way, he's one of the few people that you could actually say that at the age of 26 he passed away. He had already lived a full life. At the age of 14, he invented the RSS news feed. Then he invented the Reddit news site and headed the Stop SOPA
right, SOPA
organization.
Right.
And I didn't even realize he was with Alan Grayson. I mean, it just makes you feel like, what the heck have I been doing with myself? And but unfortunately, while technically it was a suicide last year, it was, as I put it, like Socrates, a state-sponsored execution. What happened was is that Aaron Swartz is the Robin Hood of the Information Liberation Front, as I think of him. The first thing he did was he released U.S. court records to the public. We have public courts, but to get the full case records of certain cases, which I need, for example, to report on stories. You know, if you read Greg Palast, my books, a lot of material is hidden in plain sight in, you know, page 225,000 of the evidence attachments in a court record. They're not actually confidential in some cases, just hidden in a giant pile of paper. Aaron released all that public information that you'd normally have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for, even though it's public records, and they're just, you know, electronic dots. It doesn't really cost anything. This is just create an information elite, make sure that corporations' records, when they're sued for malfeasance, are never made public. He made it all public. After he did that, and he was threatened with arrest, but they let him go, he then released the information from what's called JSTOR. JSTOR is a, JSTOR is kind of what I call the Goldman Sachs and Politburo of university research. The United States government, the U.S. taxpayer, pays billions of dollars a year to support universities and professors doing basic research. Well, it's been now turned into a money-making operation. The research that we pay for, those papers now, are locked up in this vault called JSTOR and sold for big bucks by a few university monopolists
right. And
private operators. And so basically they're taking the public information. This is the public commons. It's like locking. It's as if someone took Yosemite. The difference is that this is more valuable than Yosemite. This is all the research information in America. And they locked it up. Aaron went in there with a little thumb drive and unlocked the system and let it all pour out.
Right.
And this is our stuff that he liberated. It's ours. And he opened the gates to the information Yosemite, the public commons, and he was arrested by the Obama administration and charged with crimes under the Terrorism Acts, and charged with crimes that would put him in prison. He's only 26 for 35 years.
Amazing.
35 years for releasing public information. No one has said, oh, this is a national security threat, yet he's charged under the anti-terrorism laws. This is public research information.
Right.
Not even getting into the Edward Snoke
question of whether or not, you know, national security was put at risk or anything like that. He was releasing, you know, scholarly information. And in fact, you put something in your piece today or yesterday or back in January of last year. If Oxford joined JSTOR when Isaac Newton published, only a well-heeled elite would have the secret of thermodynamics. If Newton worked for Microsoft, we'd be paying a royalty for the use of gravity. I mean, kind of far-fetched, but you're making the point here.
No, not at all.
Or not, okay.
It's you know, after all, I mean, and we've actually seen this has caused death. Mm. I'll be very blunt.
Oh, yeah. Well.
For example, one of my investigations in my book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, was on AIDS drugs. The United States government, courageous doctors handling AIDS, and which they didn't understand, mm-hmm. was highly, highly infectious. They did not know how to deal with it. Private companies refused to do any research on AIDS medicine. When the National Institute of Health realized that AZT could slow the course of AIDS, the company that held the patent on AZT, Hoffman La Roche, which it bought the patent as a cat medicine, suddenly said, oh, we own that.
Uh-huh.
And they took all the money from AZT and withheld it.
Oh, my God.
For example, from Africa. Nelson Mandela was begging for this medicine and begging for the right to replicate it. Again, I want to remind you, this was a medicine that was first created at the National Institute of Health, investigated by a National Institute of Health to that was effective against AIDS, and yet we have a private company which says, nah, we bought it for cats. It's ours now. We'll make billions off it. And if you don't pay up, if you don't pay us $20,000 a year for this medicine, you die. Your money or your life. And in Africa, it was mostly the lives that paid. And this, by the way, if you want to know how come Nelson Mandela did not just go ahead and replicate the AIDS medicine, is that a very progressive guy named Al Gore told him, you do that and we'll cut off all exports of fruits and vegetables and destroy the economy of South Africa. And so what Aaron Swartz has done is taken on the information terrorists. He was not a terrorist. And now, today, okay, the information, which is ours, is what he was liberating. Today there's a bunch of groups, including his former group that he founded, Reddit, which is saying that on one hand, the government is withholding the public information, but then taking the public's information and making it part of, you know, putting us all under surveillance through the National Security Administration. You know, on September 11th, 2001, we were all, America was a victim.
Mm-hmm.
By September 12th, we were all the suspects. And Obama has taken the Bush administration's, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney's freak out about terrorism, looking for terrorists under every coffee cup, and taking it to a new level. I got to tell you that we used to, I remember you and I used to attack John Ashcroft. I know his protege. And he said, you know, Ashcroft never in a million years would have gone along with any of this stuff.
Isn't that
the Obama
amazing?
Administration is, Eric Holder is far to the right of John Ashcroft.
Oh, yeah.
And has taken a much more, in blunt terms, a fascistic position. Locking. And when I say fascism, I'm not using that loosely. Fascism is the lockup of corporate power and government power, and that's what we're seeing now. And again, by the way, in case people don't have your reference, at gregpalace.com you can read Rest in Peace, Aaron Swartz, which is attached to the article I wrote a year ago, right after his death, called Aaron Swartz Died for Piers Morgan's Sins.
Right, and I want to find out about that from you, Greg Palace, and of course I will link to all of these from my blog at radioornot.com, as well as the new DVD you have out, Vultures and Vote Rustlers, and so we'll talk about that in a moment too. But you know, Aaron Swartz, genius in every sense of the word, persecuted to the point of suicide. Really, it was a witch hunt. They went after him. It was just horrific. Why are you mentioning Piers Morgan in the same breath?
Well, Piers Morgan is a genius,
isn't
at
he?
Least according to our government. And Piers Morgan, if you're wondering how this British git
yeah.
has a prime time show.
Really?
In the United States.
Right, yes.
In the United States.
I've wondered that.
But
often.
He cannot go back to Britain, because the second he steps off the plane, he will be in handcuffs. Let me explain.
Really?
Piers Morgan was the editor of a piece of toilet paper called The Mirror, which pretended to be a paper. And what he did was he got broke into phone records and answering machines and got people's personal information. Like he used a trick to get into Paul McCartney's answering machine.
Uh-huh.
Okay, to get in, you know, tittle information,
right.
To put in his papers. Now, there are, at this moment, a couple of other editors in Britain who are in prison for doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan cannot, from Rupert Murdoch's operation in Britain.
Yes, right.
And Piers Morgan, not only, in the case of the Murdoch operation, there's good reason to believe that Murdoch himself did not know about the phone tapping, the phone theft, and the information theft, and busting into people's personal records. But in the case of Piers Morgan, we do have information that Piers confessed on my television show that he personally was involved. He knew about and was personally involved in and directed some of the phone invasions, private phone invasions. Now, this is very interesting, because no wonder the Obama administration loves this guy, because he's like a one-man NSA. He breaks into your private stuff, makes money off it, and he was allowed into. And now, how do you let a guy who's a criminal? And I don't say that lightly.
Right.
Believe me, I don't say that lightly. But a guy who has committed criminal acts, how is he let in? He's let in under something called the Genius Visa Program. We have a special program in the United States that if you are a genius and you have done something extraordinary in the arts or sciences. In other words, you're someone like Aaron Swartz.
Right.
You can be allowed in the United States. But supposedly, you're not allowed in if there's any evidence that you have participated in, not even been arrested or convicted, but there's evidence that you participated in a criminal act. That was waived. The criminal act sections were waived by the Obama administration's ambassador to Britain, who a former vice president of Citibank, very close to Time Warner, which wanted Piers Morgan in, And in fact, if you go to my site through radio or not, you'll actually see a picture of Piers Morgan,
yep,
the U.S. ambassador at the Time Warner show launch party. So you've got basically a criminal who is more than happy to be a they love him because he's breaking in and stealing information for a profit, unlike Aaron Schwartz, who is releasing public information for the public good, never made a dime off this. This guy could have been, he could have been richer than Bill Gates.
Right.
He's a heck of a lot smarter. He came up with extraordinary things, and he didn't go out of his way to see how much money he could make off it. He believed in public information. He believed in this great, crazy American ideal of a free press and an open government. And for that, he paid with his life.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Wow, this is stunning. So, Piers Morgan's still on television. Why? I don't know. Not like he's burning up, you know, the ratings charts or anything.
Because let me tell you something. Don't forget this. Piers Morgan's specialty, like Herbert Hoover, is to get private information on people.
He has
a lot of private information that he hasn't released. Let's remember that I have no doubt, and Piers, by the way, listens in. He knows what I'm on. Hi, Piers. I know what you
hi,
have.
Hi, Piers. Hi, NSA. Right. So,
hi, Piers. I know what you have, and I'm not kidding. He does listen in. He's always worried about me. I don't know why. He's got these guys in his little pocket.
Wow.
So Piers obviously has ways to make sure that he stays on the air and stays out of prison. And he has to stay out, of course, his home country, because you can only buy so much of the British government before they finally decide that the Queen has it with you and it's off to the Tower. So,
well, that's about enough of that today. How about that? I'll tell you, you got to find this news and information wherever you can find it, boys and girls. And I had to take a quick break there. I had a good old boy break down in front of my house out here, ran out of gas, so I had to scrounge around the property and find a little gas so he could get to the gas station. So I wonder if this ever happens to the boys on CBS, NBC, and ABC. I'm out of here. 14-5.
Take this job and shove.
Musical badass.
I'm very unapologetic.
He had two tigers in the back of the bus. He
tends to buck the system.
My name is Sue.
You just look at him and know he's an outlaw.
Who is this guy?
He's a real pisser, man.
Smell of whiskey burning down Copperhead Road.
It's one cool son of a gun,
man. Fearless.
That badass image.
Little too late to do the right thing.
The original bad girl of country music.
24/7, in your face.
I'm going to do these things exactly my way.
Baby, this here outlaw, I'm God.
He just blew this town wide open.
He's a real outlaw.
You know what? If you don't like it,
we will kick your ass.
That's an outlaw, baby.
What is this outlaw thing anyway? Why does America love outlaws? I'll tell you why. They represent the rebel in all of us. They spit in the face of authority. They raise hell. They don't give a damn what you think. Hell, I made a career out of it. But even I can't hold a candle to this guy. Big, mean, plastered with tattoos. And he's your mother's worst friggin' nightmare.
Go drink a couple dozen beers and go out. Jam some gears, cause I'm a long-haired redneck rock and roll sound of the South.
If there's such a thing as an Ozzy Osbourne of country music, it's got to be David Allan Coe.
One true outlaw badass crazy, which is what makes him great.
David Allan Coe often bragged of killing a man in prison. He was never charged with murder, but the small-time felon did spend 20 of his first 34 years in and out of Ohio's reform schools, county jails, and state pens. Paroled in 67, Coe took off for Nashville.
That's the only place my parole officer would allow me to go.
He used to wear these capes, which were essentially four or five fox skins sewn together with the heads, without the eyes.
Me being an animal lover, I was like, God, who is this guy?
I was presenting myself as the mysterious Rhinestone Cowboy. It was like the Lone Ranger.
Coe signed a record deal in 68, and he had some minor success. Then in the 70s, he wrote number one hits for Tanya Tucker and Johnny Paycheck. Coe's Wild Mind, the logical follow-up, was a pair of X-rated albums.
Filthy, disgusting, pornographic songs.
He's scraping the bottom of the barrel, and we love him for it.
This guy's got the guts to sing songs that nobody else would touch.
I can cuss, I can fight, I can spit, I can belt, I can raise all kinds of hell.
He seems to have that badass image, and I can understand why he has such a following.
When God made him, he broke the mold, totally.
Rock and roll, son of the South.
I actually did a show with him one time years ago, and he invited me on his bus. So we're kind of sitting there, and all of a sudden I hear this, wah! I'm like, what the hell's that? He had two tigers in the back of the bus.
I've just always considered myself an entertainer, basically.
Why don't you ever call me by my mother?
Down to the nitty gritty.
David Allan Coe is my name.
Real outlaw. It's David Allan Coe, man.
Talk about bad.
Yeah, he's one bad man. And if you're called an outlaw today, you deserve respect. Because if you're an in-law, that means you're kissing the ass of the system. So let's hear it all for outlaws.